Getting started. So welcome along. Hopefully you're all in the right place. The Accidental Team Foundation Server admin. I've got to say, it looks a lot less intimidating from the back of the room. The further you get up the front, it's looking worse. So my name's Anthony Borton. I'm going to be the presenter for the next hour and a little bit. And we're going to learn all about administering Microsoft Team Foundation Server. So many computers, it's great. All right, so a little bit about me just before we get started. So again, my name's Anthony Borton. I've got a little map there to show you where I live. Seems to be a long, long, long way away. I live in Brisbane down there. So it was 24 hours from Wheels Up in Brisbane. I went to Sydney for a little while, over to Dallas for a little while, and over to Orlando, and touchdown almost to the minute 24 hours later. But it is bright and early. I'm due to wake up any time soon. In the next probably 30 minutes, I think it'll be wake up time. So I'm a Microsoft certified professional, so by the numbers there, I've been an MCP since 93. So who's done a Microsoft exam? Ah, oh, fantastic, keep your hands up, come on. Keep your hand up if you've done more than 10 exams. Ah, fantastic, got one player still. Really? Ah, fantastic, two players. Keep your hand up if you've done more than three players. Too close to call? All right, let's make it harder then. More than 20 exams. See all you guys that have lives? Yeah. I've done 55 exams at last count. Just a sign of not a particularly bright person, just a stubborn person. That goes all the way back to exam 001. MS-DOS 5 and microcomputer hardware was that exam. I've been a Microsoft certified trainer since 96, so I've been working with development teams and IT pros for quite a while, helping them adopt best practices either in the IT pro space or in the development area. And I guess ALM's a great pursuit for me because it helps keep me in touch with both sides. I'm a Microsoft Visual Studio ALM MVP for, I think, the last 6 years now, so it's a great community of external individuals working with TFS and their ALM tools. I've developed, I think, five courses for TFS 2010 that I get to deliver around the world, which is fantastic. And I've got, I think, two of those rewritten ready to go now for the 2012 release, with the others due out in the next couple of months. So I guess I have an ideal situation there where I get to go out and consult and help people adopt TFS and find out what their problems are and try and work to make them better. And at the same time, I also do a lot of training, which is great just to reach a large number of people and share some challenges and experiences that they've had. So that's a little bit of background about me anyway. So the Accidental Team, I've typed his slide wrong straight away. How bad's that? Poor Martin. So the Accidental TFS admin was introduced to TechEd audiences last year. Did anyone come along to Martin's session last year? Excellent, sir. So, last year, Martin had the pleasure of introducing the audience. Here he is. Hey, that's Martin. He's come in to have a look at what I'm going to do to his session. Don't look at the heading of this slide. So, Martin introduced the concept of the Accidental TFS admin, someone that I come into contact with frequently. Maybe it's the developer who has gone and read a little bit about TFS, and they think, this looks okay, so they find a spare hardware or a virtual machine, and then they go ahead and install Team Foundation Server, have a bit of a play with it. Others in the team think, well, that looks all right, we'll give that a go as well. And of course, you then become the TFS administrator. If there's any questions, any problems, any challenges, then you're in the hot seat. Maybe it's just because you're the last guy to touch it, the last man standing in the office. So I'm curious, who in the room would categorise themselves as an Accidental TFS admin? Who in the room has to look after that box or boxes? Excellent. It means most of you are in the right place. Now, the rest of you are just coming along just to see what you can learn on a Wednesday afternoon. But no one's running out of the room, so I'm assuming that there's another category there that I've missed. All right, so this was our Accidental TFS Administrator 2010. The goal of my presentation is to turn you into that. I was going to have one more animation where I capitalized the letters, and I thought, don't know if that'd go over so well. So what's facing the accidental TFS administrator this year? As a recap, Martin took us through things like server topology, so how we could install TFS. We talked about app tiers and, you know, data tiers and how you can combine them, all of the infrastructure that you could run TFS on. We looked at, you know, sizing, performance, and a number of issues. So what's changed? What's on the agenda for the accidental TFS administrator, you know, at a time when TFS 2012 is just around the corner? So what I've decided here was probably one of the biggest things on the radar is going to be, you know, upgrading to that 2012 release. If you're an accidental TFS administrator, and if you're lucky enough to be on 2010, that's excellent. 2008, yeah, that's okay. 2005, what are you doing? That upgrade will be probably one of the biggest things for you to think about and look at in the next probably 6 to 12 months, just depending on your corporate culture. I've also included a bit of information there around upgrading from Visual SourceSafe. There's still plenty of organizations with this version control sitting in Visual SourceSafe. So what's the story look like? How do we move from Visual SourceSafe up to up to TFS 2012? With upgrade being such a big issue for us, or something that's certainly on our agendas, we also need to then consider backward compatibility. You know, if we're currently on 2008, if we're currently on 2010, it's nice to go and say, look, I've just installed the server, and then no one can connect. So you don't want to be the accidental TFS admin in that situation. So we'll talk a little bit about that backward compatibility. If we upgrade the server, can our developers who are still stuck maintaining VB6 code or their 2005 projects, can they still talk to that TFS server? And we'll find out how. I want to have a look at, and this is a little bit unusual there, some new configuration automation. As an administrator, there's a couple of really neat little features, a little command line addition to TFS config that I'll show you. We want to have a talk about the changes to security and permissions, learning that where we used to go and manage a lot of those permissions has changed. But then again, there's a lot of things that are still the same, things that haven't changed. So let's have a look at both of them. And then finally, we want to talk about teams inside a team project. So my goal is to try and get through all of that and have some time left over to do some Q&A at the end. So wish me luck. All right. So in terms of your administration experience, I'm curious to find out who's been looking after a TFS server, say, for more than 3 years? Okay. For more than a year? Okay, so most of the people in the audience then are probably more novice to TFS administration. So in this session, I can't sort of show and teach everything in deep depth, but one of my goals is to make sure that I arm you with the resources you need. If I can't show it to you because of time this afternoon, I want to make sure that when you get back to the office, you know exactly where to go and what resources you should use. You know, some lessons from the field. So our first one here is upgrading from Team Foundation Server 2010 up to 2012. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Fantastic. So one of the first things you need to consider and have a look at is what does that upgrade entail? You need to have a look at the server operating system that the server is currently on. And if it sits in one of these little categories here, where you've now got a red cross, that's a challenge for you because it means that the operating system that you're currently sitting on is not supported by 2012. So that's straight away going to drive you down a certain path. Okay, that'll be a migration-based upgrade as opposed to an in-place upgrade. In essence there, what you can see is really 64-bit operating systems. I think that's the main lesson there. 64-bit, so Windows Server 2008 with Service Pack 2, 2008 R2 with Service Pack 1, or Windows Server 2012, all supported by Team Foundation Server 2012. Now, of course, we've got three key prerequisite products. The next of those is SQL Server. So what version of SQL is our current TFS server sitting on? And again, if you've got SQL 2008 R2 or 2012, Well, I'd be surprised if you had 2012 so far, because it wasn't supported in 2010. But either way, the main call out there is that if you're using SQL Server 2008, we're going to need to look at upgrading that before we can go to 2012. And of course, the final one is, in fact, the easiest of the lot. And that's our dependency, or our ability to integrate with SharePoint products. So you'll see there that if it's supported by 2010, it's pretty much supported by the 2012 release preview, with a couple of extras down the bottom. So the answer to a couple of those questions there may change the upgrade approach that you have. Now, your main choices are, do we do an in-place upgrade? Now, that's decidedly attractive from the perspective that the information stays on the TFS server. We simply get to upgrade it in place. And that seems to be probably one of the easier ones. We'll also talk about a migration-based upgrade. Now, the next slide, I'm sure, is way overwhelming for everyone. And this is more a slide that I put there for your benefit and enjoyment post-conference. I don't expect anyone to try and read through all of that content. I will call out one thing there. So this information has been taken from the ALM Rangers upgrade guidance. So I want to ensure that they get due credit for it. And what it shows us is a variety of configurations down the left-hand side, ranging from the operating system, the TFS version, whether it's 32-bit or 64-bit, and it shows you what options are available to move across to 2012. So in terms of reading it, we should be looking down the left-hand side, finding which one, is the appropriate fit for your organization, your TFS server, and then following the line across. Starting at the top one with the big red block there, while it's unsupported to do that as a direct upgrade, you can go across to 2010, and then it's a 2010 upgrade to 2012. So it's not all lost there. The main thing to look at here is, depending on what you see on the left, are they candidates for a migration-based upgrade? Or is it an in-place upgrade, or do you have the choice between both? Okay, so that's our little reference or lookup table. As far as an in-place upgrade goes, I guess over the years, if there's ever been a problem with an upgrade from one version to the next, if there's ever been a problem applying a service pack, my personal experience would say that in at least 80% of those cases, it was a pre-existing problem made worse when you try and put an update or an upgrade over the top of it. Okay? So to be very, very clear there, before you order to do any form of upgrade or migration, step one, make sure, actually it doesn't say step one there, but this is my personal tip, make sure that TFS server is functioning correctly first. Now there's some great tools there. Our best practices analyzer, one of the power tools, or BPA tool for short. Hopefully that should already be on your server. So who's run the BPA tool? Excellent. Not really. Every administrator should run that tool. Who runs the tool regularly every 4 weeks? Okay, there's some great opportunity for improvement. That's how I choose to interpret that. So, the best practices analyzer is a power tool. I will spend a minute on it because you should be using it if you're looking after your server. So you install the power tools. They're a free download from Microsoft. And one of those power tools is the best practices analyzer. You go in there and you say, I'd like to go and do a health check. It takes, well, on average, about 10 minutes, and it sort of wanders out across all of the TFS infrastructure, checks it against an expanding rule set, and comes back and tells you via a report how that server's going. But now it's that easy. So every month, let's say, we'll go in there, we'll run the BPA tool, and it'll have a look and try and identify any problems, any misconfiguration, any challenges. And the reason that we should be running it with a regular, some form of regularity that includes more than once, is because things change. Disks run out of room, say group policy comes down and changes the password policy, and your service account's about to expire in the next 5 days. Things change, configuration changes. As a result, you'll benefit a lot from running this BPA tool. And the good news is it's a very safe, easy tool to use. You can, in fact, even automate it to run as a command line utility with a task scheduler. You can say, go and run this every 4 weeks and then dump the outputs into this location for me. At minimum, as soon as you install a TFS server, before anyone touches that box, you run the BPA tool. So I'm trying to get a strong message across here, lots of BPA. Now, if we're going to do an upgrade, run the best practices analyzer for 2010. Okay, run the version on the server that you've got, make sure everything's okay and configured well, resolve any issues or problems. And a lot of those error messages include hyperlinks that'll take you to where you can find more information about resolving the problem. And then once you've got that server nice and shiny, then we'll do a backup. For novelty's sake, we'll do a trial restore, and I'm scared to ask. And after we've done the trial restore and it's all proven okay, then we'll consider going ahead with the upgrade that we want to do. We'll follow the upgrade wizard, and in terms of an in-place upgrade, it's actually not so bad. It's almost go in, control panel, programs and features, take TFS off, which leaves all of our databases there. We then go and install the 2010 version, go and say that it's an upgrade configuration, answer a couple of questions in a wizard, and it will then go and update the database schema for us and upgrade the server in place. All right. And again, no surprises here. As soon as that upgrade is finished, what do? You run the next version of the BPA tool, so the version that comes with the 2012 power tools, and you make sure that that BPA tool gives you a clean bill of health. Then you're going to feel reasonably comfortable with that upgrade process. So in terms of an action item, for all of you that have indicated that you're looking after a TFS server, one of the first things you should be doing when you get back to the office, run that BPA tool and just check on the health of that box. Okay? An ounce of prevention, there's some proverb along those lines. A migration-based upgrade is a little different. It requires two TFS servers. And what it basically says is that we've got our existing TFS server, we've got a new stack, so we'll go and build and install a whole stack for TFS 2012 release preview. What you'll then do is, again, you'll see that BPA is a consistent theme for us. We can go in there, back up the machine, we can detach the team project collection, detach it from SQL, copy it across to the new data tier, and there's a tool and utility where we can go and attach the team project collection. It will do the upgrade for us there. We run the BPA tool. Guys, I'm going through a very high level set of steps here. I don't mean to try and oversimplify it, oversell you on the fact that, hey, it's easy and it's going to be, you know, work every time. But more to provide just a very high level comparison of an in-place upgrade versus a migration-based upgrade. So in terms of post-migration based upgrade steps, there's still a few things to do. The in-place upgrade's okay because everything's still on the same box. But the process that I've just spoken about does not move any SharePoint content across. So again, if you've got some SharePoint content on your TFS server, then you'll need to move that across separately. You'll then need to go and wire up the portals for that new TFS 2012 instance. So a couple of post-migration steps there. Reports are not automatically upgraded for you. Your SharePoint connections will need to be re-established as well. And any team projects that are already there will be set at a 2012 functional level. And I'll use that as a bit of a segue into an upcoming section. In terms of the resources to use, if this is something that you're going to need to do back in the office, and 2012's got some awesome features in there, so I'm really hoping that most of you will get a chance to do this upgrade and look at the 2012 version sometime soon. So two resources to have a look at. Firstly, the TFS installation guide. Now, I've had someone talking to me a little bit earlier as well. If you're going to do an installation of TFS, let's take upgrade out of the picture for a minute. The installation guide is absolutely fantastic. And you know, I can say that if you follow that guide fairly much to the letter, you've increased your chances of a good healthy server exponentially. So again, all of this information is on the slide deck. You can pull down from the TechEd portal. So you'll have access to all of these resources straight after the session. In fact, you've had access to them before the session if you happen to look. So the installation guide is a CHM file. It's also on the TFS ISO. And the other thing I'll call out there is the Microsoft ALM Rangers, a group of Microsoft support service staff, MVPs like myself, look to you know, go out there and fix adoption blockers, whether it's through training or guidance, whether it's through the creation of little utilities and things. So one of the great things is the Rangers have sim shipped with the 2012 release product, or sorry, release preview. So there's, I think, and under the guidance of Bijan and Willie, I think there's something like 18 projects there. I could be overselling that. So 18 packages of guidance to help you. And one of those is that upgrade guidance. And that guidance talks about various scenarios, talks about the different personas that will do these upgrades, and they provide pre-upgrade checklists, post-upgrade checklists, and a heck of a lot of information and detail there. So I think it's a 97-page document. Lots of screenshots, don't worry about the size too much. But a heck of a lot of information that will make that process go a lot more smoothly for you. Whatever's happening over here on this keyboard, I've just advanced about 10 slides. That's better. So in terms of the Ranger guidance, I was going to show you a URL there and say this is a 97-page document. I've just changed my mind. You can have a look at that, I'm sure, yourselves. Upgrading from SourceSafe. So SourceSafe's still there. Would anyone like to admit to having a SourceSafe server? Absolutely. Be proudish. All right. In terms of upgrading from SourceSafe to 2010, what was required? Actually, that's really interesting too. Who's ever done that? Who's upgraded from SourceSafe to 2010? Was it great fun? No. No, it wasn't. It involved playing with some XML files, and I'm taking some liberties here. It involved firstly going and analysing the database to make sure it was okay, so we had an analyse.xml file and we had to put some information in there. Usually the result of the analyse was typically tens of thousands of errors. Yes? Which was really only probably a handful of errors on a large number of files. So then you'd go back through and you'd make some changes and you'd run it again and you'd be down to 5,000 errors. Yes, progress. And you'd run it again and you'd sort of par those errors down. You'd use a user mapping file because SourceSafe's typically been around for quite a long time. And we'll go in there and we'll say that, you know, this user in the SourceSafe database maps to this particular user in Active Directory now. So you'd hand do that. You'd go back to the XML file, you'd make some changes to turn it from an analyze to a migration script, and you'd go back and you'd run that tool again. Now, that was not a fun process, as people have attested to. It often took large amounts of time, depending on how much data you had in SourceSafe. But it worked. It just could have and perhaps should have been a little easier. So that's what it looked like with previous versions. Things are changing in 2012. So now if you want to import or upgrade from your SourceSafe repository into 2012, that VSS converter command line utility is gone. That functionality now exists as a wizard in the TFS administration console. Yes, the process has been much more streamlined, no handcrafting XML files. Up comes a wizard. You say to the wizard, well, this is my repository over here, and you tick which projects you want to upgrade. You answer a couple of other little questions, and it just magically does the job for you. Does that sound better? The tool supports both on-premise TFS servers, but also equally well hosted TFS. So that if we wanted to go and import our SourceSafe into, you know, TFS on Azure or TFS Preview, then you certainly can or will be able to do that. One thing to point out is it's not currently there in the release candidate. What you will see, and I can't remember if I dropped a slide in there or not. Yes, I did. If you were to have a look in the current release preview, if you open up the server administration console, down here, Visual SourceSafe upgrade. You'll click here to install the upgrade wizard, and it will take you to a placeholder page, and you'll feel decidedly cheated. The good news is, though, is that as soon as that comes out somewhere around the RTM timeframe, then that will certainly take you to the right place to put that little tool and feature in there. So if you are planning or thinking about an upgrade from Visual SourceSafe, the process from SourceSafe into 2012 is much better than it's ever been before. That's great news, and those of you that have done it will understand that. All right, so maintaining backward compatibility, we've chatted about a couple of different upgrades now. So if we're doing this upgrade, what about our existing users who still are supporting traditional ASP, who are still supporting Visual Studio and many other different things? So firstly, we can go side by side. So if we have Team Explorer 2010 on our machine today, we can go and install Team Explorer 2012 and Visual Studio 2012, and that's going to work just fine side by side with what's already there. Okay, so that helps us a lot in terms of staging our migration from 2010 over to 2012. There is the Visual Studio 2010, SP1, Team Foundation Server 2010 Compatibility GDR. There's a mouthful for you. This has only been available now for a couple of weeks, and what that will do is it provides that compatibility for the 2010 users to connect directly to a 2012 server and get access to all of the capabilities and features of that 2012 machine. It does require that you have Service Pack 1 installed, and I'll put a download link there for you. So first and foremost, if your server is upgraded to 2012, that won't in any way impact in a negative way any existing projects and users that are still using the 2010 platform. Way too many numbers. What about those people still using 2008? So if your users are using 2008 and maintaining 2008 projects, and they're not ready to upgrade those, or there's no compelling reason to upgrade those, then there is also a compatibility GDR downloadable that they can use. And again, that means that Visual Studio 2008 users can talk to a 2012 server. Okay, excellent news there again. And of course, our old friend, the MISCI provider, or the Microsoft Source Control Client Interface. So if you're using any of those systems that you see down the bottom there, you can download the MISCI provider power tool, install it wherever you've got these things installed, and then all of those systems can talk directly back to the version control in TFS 2012. So what we're seeing there is really a very high compatibility bar. So if you've upgraded your server or considering upgrading your server to 2012, then in terms of compatibility, I'm hoping that that means that pretty much every developer within your organization should be well able to then continue using it or start using it. All right, feature enablement. This one's really cool, and the story only changed very recently. So I'm a little bit curious. How many people have ever upgraded a 2008 server to 2010? Okay, so not so many. So upgrading the server wasn't necessarily an overly difficult thing. I generalise there very much. But one of the biggest challenges is when you upgrade a server, it does not upgrade the features or capabilities of the team projects that are there. And if you think about it, it has to do that. It has to be very conservative. We don't want it mucking with our process. Now, to be clear, for those of you that haven't had the experience, what I'm talking about is if we were on 2008 and we wanted to upgrade to 2010, we could do the upgrade, and some of the compelling reasons why we want to do that would be things like we want the test case work item type. We want all the new testing features and capabilities. We want our shared steps work item type. We want the new link types, the hierarchical work items, the 13 named links we can use now. We may want our agile planning workbooks, the iteration workbook, and so on. Maybe we want branch visualization or the new lab management features. So if we've upgraded the server, but our existing projects are still at the old functional level, then that's not a good outcome for us. So again, for those people that have done the upgrade from 2008 to 2010, how many of you actually went in and retrofitted the features?
We're in process now.
Excellent. Enjoying it?
Not so much.
Good. I'm really, really glad that you didn't use colourful language in answering that question. So without going into the specific details, what that upgrade looks like is a whole lot of work editing XML files using command line utilities. It's quite frankly a fair bit of work. You've got to go and manually add these link types, go and add work item types, you've got to modify the bug work item type, add these special fields, you've got to run command line tools, you've got to grant permissions. There's plenty more to go. You've then got to enable the work in your agile planning workbooks, convert branched folders, enable this, and it's going to break all your reports too, so you've got to fix all that up. It's a fair bit of work, and I don't need to dig into that in any more detail. It is well documented. You have found some good guidance on how to do that, I assume? Finally, it is there if you go looking for it, and the process, it is reliable and repeatable. But it's just, you know, a lot of work. So when you upgrade your 2010 server up to 2012, you get some things for free. The description field changes from plain text to HTML. There's got to be, it's a little clap, surely. Not, thank you. Not for me, for the product. And what the little clap is now that when we go and get some information from an HTML formatted email, or we copy paste, suddenly all of the formatting doesn't magically disappear anymore. It's a small win, but a win we've wanted for a while. You can now insert inline images into those HTML fields, which is something that people have wanted as well. We've got merge on save for work items. Yeah. All right, thank you, some enthusiasm. It's the afternoon, I know. So we've had the concept of merging source for many, many years, but what about issues where multiple people are editing the same work item? So now there's ways of dealing with that easily. The history tab's been upgraded, so now we can go into the history tab and have a look at, or filter it down to discussions or all changes. Team Queries changes its names to Shared Queries. That's just a by-the-by. Each team project's automatically given a default team. Virtual directory name changes, and all that happens for free. We lose a few things as well. You can no longer create folders under My Favourites. And that would generally only be a very small subset of people in my experience. I'm sure they'll sadly miss it, but I haven't seen that widely used. Work item only view for web access has been replaced, and I'll show you a little bit more of that shortly. Several functions have now been deprecated in Team Web Access, meaning that the functionality is still there, it's just in a different place. You can no longer drag and drop documents and reports into My Favourites. The product backlog and iteration backlog workbooks are no longer supported. Who used them? Who used any of those Excel workbooks? Okay, so just a couple of you. So the good news is all of the functionality that was in those workbooks certainly still exists and has been greatly improved. It's just baked in the product now. So the fact that we're losing the spreadsheets shouldn't be of a lot of concern there. You've got something that is much better and baked straight into the product. Something you lose there, any custom controls that have been currently written for previous versions will no longer work in the next version. So again, if you've done custom controls, that's a bit of a challenge for us. Yes, sir? How do server-side plugins go? It's going to have to be a depends answer. The execution pipeline's still going to be there. It's going to depend exactly what you're trying to do. Nothing jumps out at me, but I can't, without knowing the specifics and details, I can't offer any advice one way or the other. More than happy to take it offline after the session, though, and see what we can talk through. Yeah? Okay. So, some of the new features, some of the things that, the organisation have said, hey, we want to go to 2012. Some of the features that you're looking to get are going to be things like the agile planning tools. You want to go and have things like the real-time burn downs. You want to have the task boards. You want to do the drag and drop between them. You want to do the forecasting and the capacity planning stuff. You want the new code review workflow. Okay, have you seen that? I think a developer collaboration session is on right now that's going to showcase some of it. My guess is you're going to miss it. But the code review workflow is being greatly improved in 2012, and long overdue, if I can be honest. The ability to manage our feedback, create feedback requests, capture that and be able to audit these feedback requests over time. Integration with the storyboarding, so when we can do our quick prototyping of UIs up front. Hidden types category, I'm not quite sure why I put that one there. That's not a compelling feature to want you to rush out and upgrade. But it is something that you would need to enable. A few of these new work item types should not be directly creatable from Team Explorer. So there's a category there now where we can go in there and say, well, look, make sure these ones don't appear where they shouldn't be. So if you want to do the upgrade, you need to go and do the legwork to enable all of those features, or at least you did until the release preview. In the release preview, there is a new tool. And that tool is the configuration wizard. What that wizard will do is it will scan through the current process used to create that team project. It will identify what features are not currently enabled. It will say, hey, well, you know, you've upgraded your server. You've got a 2010 project with, say, MSF Agile 5, which means it hasn't got A, B, C, and D. Would you like to upgrade those? It'll have a look at the features that are missing, and it will determine from the list of installed process templates which installed process template contains those features that you're looking for. And it'll say, well, look, you know, what you're missing can be found in MSF Agile V6. Would you like to apply those? You'll go ahead and say, sounds good, verify. And it will then go and make those changes for you. No touching of, you know, WIT admin, no command line utilities, no opening XML in Notepad or whatever and making the changes yourself. That is absolutely extraordinary. It'll add our process, our agile planning tools in there, the category tasks, and we don't need to go through the finer points here, short of saying, get an appreciation for all of the hard work this takes out of it. The code review, work item types are put in there, the categories are put in there, feedback's dealt with for us in terms of my work. So one of the fundamental shifts from 2000, well, from all previous versions of TFS, is, for example, as a developer goes in and says, well, let's have a look at my work items. I'm going to do some work on this particular task. The developer does the work, and typically then when they check in, they then link it to the work item. So one of the shifts moving forward to 2012 is we want the developer to say, hey, I'm working on this. We want to move it from planned to in progress. We want to capture that state change. We want to be able to see what people are working on. And then when it's done, then we want to capture that state change as it goes back into the repository. So one of the things that the wizard does is it goes and puts the action statements in that it needs to grab the events to make that happen. Storyboarding and our hidden work item types are there, but I think we need a quick demo. So let me switch across to a different machine. The machine is awake. So I'm going to go into Visual Studio, and what I have here is a team project called Agile V5. No one in the room would ever put V5 in a team project name, would you? No, Anthony. Good, glad to hear it. Remember, you can never rename a team project, so you would avoid numbers as much as you possibly can. But the reason that I've put it there is to show you that this is a team project that was created with a process template from 2010. It's missing all the good features. I shouldn't say it quite like that. It's missing some great new features. That's probably a politer way of saying it. So what I want to do is to demonstrate that. I'm going to go and say, I want to request a code review. And notice what it's done. It's said to us, to request a code review from your peers, you've got to enable some new features. Now again, this was an enormous amount of work before. I'll jump out of there, and there's plenty of different ways. Any way that I'm going to touch any of these new features is going to prompt me in the same way. So what I'm going to do is let's go ahead, pop into Home, go into Web Access, and this is just yet another way. I'm going to go up to the admin screen, and over here, again, it is telling us that this particular team project, you know, is missing some features, and it gives us the opportunity there to configure the features. Now, doing this in any previous version, I don't know, I would have to say would be at least the work of a couple of hours. And that assumes you know where to find the information in the first place. So I'm going to go ahead and say I want to configure features, and it says, well, look, these are the features that haven't been configured for this project. And I'll say, well, can you go and have a look? And it goes through and has a look at the current process. Now, to be very, very clear, if you've done a lot of extensive template customization, this tool probably isn't for you. It is a conservative tool. It's going to go and scan there and say, look, you know, are you a candidate for this automatic feature enablement? And if there is, you know, a number of issues there, it's going to say, you know, no, this isn't the tool for you. So it will not work in 100% of scenarios, depending on the level of customization you've done. Now, based on what it's found, it said, well, you know what? The MSF for Agile Software Development 6.0 Preview 4 template seems to have everything you need. Should we go ahead and configure it? Now remember before it took a couple of hours? Let's time this one. Configure. One, two. That is so much better. We're done. Okay, so let me just go ahead and close that. I'm going to go back to Visual Studio. Just refresh that. Sometimes it doesn't work immediately, I found. That's just me trying to do a demo too quickly. If I go into my work items and say I want to create, say, a new user story, I go down here and I can make that a hyperlink. Remember I said description gets changed from a text field to an HTML field? I can also go and insert inline graphics here. I can go up, go back to home, I can say request a code review. Now that particular error has changed. It's more than happy to go through that new code review workflow for me. It's just telling me that I don't have any pending changes to do the code review with. Okay, so the five features that it found that weren't available have now been enabled through that wizard for us automatically. There is on the Visual Studio and TFS blog, there is a blog post that's come out in the last probably 10 days that also gives you a little bit of code where you can go and do this on a large number of team projects. So if you've got 100 or so team projects, you can fully automate through that, get it to iterate through the team project collection and upgrade each of the projects that it finds in that way. So some nice features there. All right, let me just switch back over here. The new configuration automation. Only a quick slide here, and believe it or not, I'm going to talk to you about an extra switch on a command line tool. How enthusiastic have you got to be for that on a late afternoon session? But for the mention, if you've ever needed to go and install build servers, if you've needed to go and put agents in there, if you want to try and automate a number of these things, then this new command line utility, sorry, this new feature added to this utility can make that an incredibly much easier task. So let me walk you through and show you exactly what I'm talking about. So I'm just going to go into my command line. Thank you. That's going to make the demo so much better for you. All right. I'm sure you've heard the joke before, but this is a new interface called Retro. I'm going to go into Microsoft. In there, into tools. This is where he's remembering if he's deleted the existing build controller and agent and hoping that he has. So TFS configure. Unattend is the new thing that we're talking about. We want to create. We want to create the settings file that will allow us to do an unattended install of some build features. But down the track, you'll be able to do this with, say, TFS proxies and other things as well. I've gone in there and said that I'm interested in build, and the unattend file I'd like you to create for me should be called create.ini. Now let's see how did his typing go. So what this should be doing for me is creating a text file, create.ini. So let's see what that looks like. Notepad, create.ini. So this is really cool. It goes and creates the file that we need to pass back into the utility to do the actual unattended work. So if we need to quickly and easily deploy build agents or build servers, we've got a new box over here, let's go and get a build agent over there, then we've got plenty of choices here. So I'm going to go down here and I'm going to choose create, but I can go and add agents. There's a number of switches. I'm not going to go through all of them for you this late in the afternoon. I would like to go and add just a single agent, you know, build agent in this particular case. I can provide a name for it there. What collection do you want to create it in? Do you want to use the built-in service account? And my answer to that for build is always no. So I'll say false. The service account won't be that built-in account. We'll go in there with VSALM. And you would never run this in a user account. It's just that's a pre-configured account for me. So whatever you're using for your TFS build service account, that's what you'd specify here. And then the service account password is going to be, I hope you're looking the other way, is password. I'll go ahead and just save that file now. Go back to my command line utility. I'll choose TFS configure. The switch is this time unattend. We want to configure now instead of creating the file, the unattend file is going to be create.ini. And let's just verify it to make sure I've done that correctly. So it's parsed that information that I've given it, displayed the information up here, and it's going to make sure that it is a well-formed unattended file. It'll check some bits and pieces for me. A brave person would say, isn't that wonderful, and that'll create the agent and leave it at that. A more gung-ho, adventurous Australian is going to actually try and do that on this machine when he realises he's probably already got one and it's going to fail. But that's okay. We'll share success and failure together. It's more about the journey. Okay, it's doing a lot of checking here. A lot more checking than it normally does. Okay, so we'll call this positive. So now let's go and just drop verify off there. And this is where we find out whether I remembered to remove the build service from the VM before I started. So what that's going to do for me now is to go and configure both a build controller and a build agent. And guess who forgot to remove it? I knew that was going to be the case. So work with me and let's imagine together that the presenter had remembered to remove the existing controller and agent from the VM. And what would have occurred there normally is that it would have gone and unattended, through that unattended file, it would have gone and created that build controller for me and gone and created that agent. So imagine that's not just for the build service, that could be for the TFS proxy, and there's a variety of other choices available for us in there as well. Again, the creation, the verification, and the execution of that unattend, I think, has been a big improvement, and for administrators that may need to do this quite regularly, this is quite good. It can also go and do things like unattended files for application tiers for TFS and a whole lot more. I could go and have a look at the log file there with you, and the log file is going to tell you what I've already told you, that I should have gone and deleted something. Anyway, the next thing I want to move on to is permissions and security. So as an accidental admin, one of the biggest challenges, I believe, is security and permissions, because these things aren't necessarily intuitive. So some of the changes that have occurred. Management of security, in most cases, has moved into team web access. In fact, a lot of the administration of TFS now exists through those web UIs. Now, the basic premise or the idea behind that is that your experience and the tools that you use for an on-premises TFS server, or whether you're using a hosted TFS server, the experience should be virtually the exact same. So you'll see more and more things moving to that web-based UI. Another improvement, apart from the fact that that change has occurred, is that we can view information about why and how an individual's permissions have come about. Has it been inherited? What groups are they a member of? So we're able to find out, as administrators, a lot more about users, their rights and permissions. Okay, so certainly an improvement. I'm not going to go into each of these groups with you, just more of a recap. 7 project level groups are created when you create a new team project collection. Project collection level groups. So we have this idea of hierarchical rights and permissions, starting with the server level, down to the team project collection level, down to the team project level, and then we can start talking about areas and iterations and so on. So a lot of hierarchical inherited permissions. At the collection level, we have our administrators, build administrators, valid users, and again, I'm not going to go through each of them, short of just giving you that awareness that we have a number of hierarchical levels to think about. Now we can administer, typo, membership of those groups through the admin console. We can administer it through the TFS security command line tool, or we can administer this now through a web UI, which I'm going to show you in just a few minutes. Server level groups are also created. Server level groups are the groups that you cannot manage and administer through the team web access. So that one's still going to be managed through the administration console or through that TFS security command line utility. And the ones that as administrators, hopefully we spend most of our time with, are going to be those groups that are created for individual team projects. Now, there's incredible fine-grained security through TFS. There's 11, 12, maybe 13 individual places where you can configure aspects of security in Team Foundation Server. So if you want very granular, fine-grained security around all sorts of things, you can have it. But I'm sure you've heard, you know, the keep it simple approach is often the best one. So if you can manage your security through these built-in groups, that's going to work out a lot easier for you generally. Now the groups that are created for a team project, our team project administrators, our contributors for the project, which generally contains most of our users, we have readers and also builders. So these are the same four that we've had for all versions of TFS so far. That can all be customized and configured. You can create your own. A common thing I'll probably do here is to create another group that sits between administrators and contributors. Contributors can basically do a lot of work with their own files and bits and pieces. Administrators can work with other people's files, simply stated, but administrators can also change permissions and they can also delete things. So, something that I'll commonly do with organisations is to create something in the middle, maybe senior developers, team leads, whatever name you want to give them, and they would be a group that, in addition to having contributor rights, also have rights to do things like unlock other users' files and do a few more day-to-day things without having them put them in administrators where they can modify security and do a lot more. Just trying to give you an example of some of the changes that you might make in here, some additional groups if you wish. So we can have some flexibility while still working with, you know, within that group hierarchy. When a new team project is created in 2012, they also create something now called a default team. We have the idea of teams within team projects that I'll come back to on that one. So let's just have a very quick look at security and permissions. Let's just see how it's changed. So I might go back out of here. We'll go into Fabric M-Fiber. Okay, so Fabric M-Fiber, this is a freely available virtual machine that you're looking at here. Brian Keller made this available, I think, at the end of last week. So it is freely available to download, pre-configured with a number of team projects in there, a great way to learn and experience some of the great features in 2012. So I'm going to switch across to the admin screen, and I'm going to go into security. Now, for this particular team project, let's have a look at Brian Keller. Brian Keller is able to manage test configurations. And I asked myself, why? And what you would have seen there as I hovered over it is, okay, it's an inherited allow. So Brian can do this work through inheritance. And when I click Y, it's going to find out, and it's going to come back and say that he picks up that right or permission through his membership of the contributors group in this team project. Okay, now again, a very, very straightforward and simple one there. But in the real world, once you start having, you know, a number of groups on a production server with a large number of team projects, it can certainly take a lot more time to figure these things out. So being able to find out where those rights and permissions are picked up is great for troubleshooting. All right, let's close out of there. Now, there's plenty of other things we can do there. I can change things here. So edit project level information. If I explicitly want to give him that right, I can simply allow it from here and save my changes. Okay. So again, that, as far as the UI goes, that experience should be common, whether it's on-premise or TFS in the cloud. Okay, so much nicer for us. Web access permissions. So again, only a little short one for us. So web access permissions. In TFS 2010, there was Team Web Access. And that was great if you had a client access license. You went into Team Web Access and you had quite, some feature-rich things you could do. You'd go in and have a look at work items. You could run and create queries. You could have a look at source control. You could go and have a look at reports and so on. There was something called Work Item Only View. And it was a function that was built around a change to licensing. And it meant that if a user did not have a TFS CAL, you could put them into a special group, and then when they went to the exact same URL as everyone else for Team Web Access, they would get a cut-down set of features that would only allow them to do what licensing let them do. So they could edit their own work items. They could see their own work items. And they were basically compliant that way. In 2012, this has been improved. So now it's not just a case of are they CAL'd or, do they not have a CAL? Now it's a story of, what level are they licensed for? So you'll see here that there's an option for limited, and that basically lets them view their own work items. That's the version of what a person can do if they don't have the TFS client access license. The standard option gives them standard features in our agile boards, and full licensing says that we've got our backlog and sprint planning and our request and manage feedback. So what this comes down to is deciding or choosing what the majority of our users are licensed for. So if you're really, really lucky, and the majority of our team have Visual Studio Premium, Ultimate, or Test Professional, what that means is I can go in and I can set the default for web access to be full. Okay, so where most of my team have those licenses and have full capabilities, let's make that the default. Then I can go in and say, I've only got two or three people that only have Pro, and they shouldn't get the rest of it. So I can go in there and I can add those people in. It basically means that it's a lot easier for me to ensure that I maintain compliance to my licensing. Okay, and it's in fact quite an easy thing to do. Let's have a quick look at configuring web access permissions. So I'm just going to go back into the admin panel, back into control panel and web access. We'll see here that you've got your choices for the default are limited, where most of your users wouldn't have a CAL, that'd be probably unusual. You can choose standard or full. Now you'll see the default here is full, but if most of my users were only, say, Visual Studio Pro users, I could go back here, set that as my default, and then for the couple of people that had the extra licenses, I could go and add them in here. So again, let me just give you the scenario. Most of my team have one of the three products, the additions I spoke about, Premium, Ultimate, or Test Professional. So I've made the default full for Team Web Access. The exception to that is Julia. So I'll go in here and put in Julia, save changes, and this will then mean that whenever Julia goes to access Team Web Access, Julia won't see those extra two features that she is not licensed for. Okay, so again, something very, very new for an accidental TFS admin, having to manage those things. The good news is it's there, it's very, very easy to do. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head what the error message is. It's a TF number, I'm not even going to try and guess. TF, I think there's a 4 and a 9 and a 0. That's not helping you at all, is it? But if you get those particular errors pop up, particularly on the project dashboard, Hopefully that'll jog your memory. It is quite a descriptive error, and a quick search on Bing should find the answer to that pretty quickly. Introducing Teams. So for an administrator, Teams is something that's quite new. It's a new feature for 2012. So let me give you an introduction to what Teams are about. TFS 2012 provides a way to subdivide people working in a team project, because there can be a large number of people working in a team project. As far as I know, Visual Studio is a single team project. Is that right, Martin? How many people?
3,500.
3,500 contributors in a single team project. That's a lot to manage. It's a lot to keep track of. So without knowing the specifics or the details of how they divide that up, you can bet your bottom dollar that they divide themselves into little teams within that team project. It just hasn't been supported very nicely within the product. Teams allow you to more easily organise, track and facilitate work amongst those users. And it's quite a natural thing. Now, I said consider a team project with 100 contributors. Well, there's a better example, 3,500 contributors. So if we have a look at this, we've got all of our contributors here. We can break them out into one or more teams. Each team gets its own product backlog, its own burn down, its own task board. They get their own iterations, their own sprints. So within a particular team project, I might say, well, you're the web guys, you're my database guys, you're my testers. Whatever you like, you can, you know, break these up into, this is the North American group and this is the European group. Sorry, I should say team. Team's the right word there. And then again, they can manage their work, their backlogs independently. So Teams is a little different. There is a security aspect to it, but let me share something with you. It does not fundamentally change the underlying permissions and the way that you manage them today. You know, we still need to make sure that our users have rights and permissions in TFS and in SharePoint and in SQL. So Teams does something a little bit, let's think of it, Teams does something on top of that. And I'll show you what I mean in just a moment. If I was to go and add a user to a team, and I can do that, I can go into Teams and I'll show you this, I'll go and add Julia. What that will do is it will only add Julia to the contributors group in TFS. Now this is something that I will expect, you know, first-time administrators in 2012 will have some challenges with. Now this nice web UI now, the ability for an administrator of just a team to say, well look, Pete's going to come and work for me, let's go and add Pete. There you go, Pete. But unfortunately that's only going to put Pete into the permissions inside TFS. If Pete goes to have a look at anything to do with SharePoint or run any of the reports out of SQL reporting services, then they're going to get tripped up with some permission issues. So I just wanted to point that out before we go and create a new team. Fantastic. So the question was more or less, can I explain what I meant by SharePoint and reporting services better? Yeah. Is that good enough to paraphrase?
Yeah, because I didn't know what the reward in the TFS, I just don't know if it was separate from that.
So one of the best things you can do, and this is a plug for Martin's talk from last year, so I'm more than happy to answer your question, but if you jumped onto Channel 9 and had a look for Accidental TFS Administrator for TechEd 2011, Martin did a really good presentation of helping people understand the fact that rights live in three places. And he also showed you the TFS admin tool you can download from CodePlex to make that a lot easier. So, a self-help thing after the conference is great. But now to answer that question for you, TFS I like to think of as being a composite product. So we rely on SharePoint to provide our dashboard, to provide our document libraries. So SharePoint brings value to TFS. SQL Reporting Services houses many of our reports for our team projects and exposes them and makes them available for stakeholders and team members to go in and say, well, look, I want to look at this report, the build quality indicators report. And then you've got TFS itself through IIS, through the web services and so forth. So these are actually three distinctly different products. Now, unfortunately, and this has been, you know, a real bugbear, what that means is it's security to manage in three places. So if I want to add Joe as a contributor, I've got work to do in TFS, work to do in SharePoint, and work to do in reporting services. So it's a fair bit of work. Martin did a very good explanation of that, and also showed you a great little tool from CodePlex to make that work a lot easier. All right. So did that answer the question for you? What's up there? All right. So in terms of creating a team, I'm just going to jump back into the right machine. Hey, the mouse moves. I'm going to go into Fabric and Fiber. What you'll see here is that I'm looking at the Fabric and Fiber web team. I can go up there and I can switch to other projects if I wish. And a team can have its own favourites. So the Fabric and Fiber web team wants to know this information here. That's the burn down chart for this particular team. When I say I want to view the backlog, this is a backlog just for that team. Now, if I go into administration, I can go back to Fabric and Fiber, and it shows us that we have two teams. I can say I want to create a new team now, and this team's going to be the testers on Fabric and Fiber, because I want them to manage their test backlog slightly differently, or maybe they're going to have a different sprint duration. And here I'm going to choose to add them into the contributors group. Now, as I tried to explain, that will only add them to contributors in TFS. There's still a little bit more work to go for us. I'll go ahead and switch across to settings. And it shows me that I'm currently the administrator. I'm logged on as Brian. But I could choose at this stage to add another administrator or two, and they would then be able to manage properties and membership of this particular team. It's also going to create a new area path, and that area path will be the area path used to identify the backlog items and so forth that relate specifically to this team's work. So I'll say create team. Okay, so there's my new team there. I can click on it. I only have one person in there. I can go and modify its description. I can specify the particular iterations. So we could go, this team, I'm not suggesting this isn't a recommended practice, but this team could work with 2-week sprints where everyone else works with 4-week sprints, just to complicate things.
Does that mean the work items have to be in that associated path in order to be associated with that team?
That's correct. Okay. Actually, it's areas that's going to do it. It's the area path, not the iteration path. Good, I just want to be clear. So if I switch on areas there, you'll see that we're identifying the particular area path for this team's work as being an area path called testers. You know, what are they taking ownership of? Okay, so areas is used very much to identify the team's area of responsibility, their backlog and so forth. All right, just a point to mention there about the team, the TFS Power Tools. So the TFS Power Tools have been an excellent addition to TFS now. Were there Power Tools for 2005? They probably went that far back?
Yes.
Yeah, fantastic. So the Power Tools have been things that you've wanted, you know, any time you've had TFS installed. So the purpose of this slide isn't to go through those Power Tools. If you've been using 2010 already, you should be familiar with those Power Tools. They're a must install. What I wanted to call out on this particular slide was simply an awareness that there won't be a set of Power Tools specifically released for the release preview. So if you were going to go live, if you were going to take advantage of the release preview today, you would go and get the beta Power Tools and install those beta Power Tools. They'll work fine with the release candidate. The final release of the Power Tools will then be expected, you know, obviously sometime around RTM of 2012. So there's a link down the bottom there where you can go and download those beta Power Tools. couple of little changes in there that I don't need to really go into. The Team Explorer enhancements, work item templates aren't currently supported in those beta power tools. And you know, it's a beta release of them, so they're certainly not feature complete. All right, so in terms of a session review, we've spoken about some of the things that really should be of interest to an accidental TFS administrator in the coming 6 to 12 months. Most of that has focused around the process of doing the upgrade, upgrading from the current version of TFS up to the 2012 release. We've spoken about upgrading from SourceSafe using a great new tool built straight into the admin console. We've talked about the fact that we've got this high compatibility bar, and you've seen that now enabling features for upgraded projects is a matter of answering a couple of questions and about 2 seconds it took to do the job for us. I've shown you very quickly the fact that we've got this new unattended option. So if you were having to, repeatedly go and deploy, build infrastructure, proxies and application tiers, then it was quite straightforward now to do that with unattended files. We've talked briefly about some of the changes around security and learned that some of those changes have moved us up into web UIs. And I also introduced you to the idea of Teams in 2012. So quite a few things there on the radar for a TFS administrator. So hopefully you found that an informative session this late on a Wednesday afternoon. Hopefully you're all feeling much more like this guy with his coloured tie and everything. Some related content. There's some great breakout sessions tomorrow. So I've chosen one by Stephen Borg and another by David Starr that might be of interest to you. Some hands-on labs that you might like to have a look at. Some certification. Oop, there's our regular storm by the sounds of it. There will be some certification exams. I don't think they've been announced yet for the 2012 release. At the moment, we've got that 2010 certification exam for 70-512, which is your TFS configuration and administration exam for 2010. I'll be down in the exhibitor hall most of tomorrow if anyone wants to catch up. And I'm more than happy to hang around a little bit later and answer any questions. Don't forget to do your eval and go into the draw to win some great prizes. And thanks for coming along this afternoon.